On this episode of Video Culture, we'll talk British crime comedies of Guy Ritchie with Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels and Snatch.
Did you rewind it?
I don't know.
In a time where everyone has a podcast, in a place where everyone has an opinion, two heroes, Matthew and Ryan, against all odds, are here to save your movie viewing experience from total disaster. Your trip through the video aisles of yesteryear begins now. There will be chills, there will be thrills, and there's a good chance that Ryan will have a coffee spill. They'll discuss the quality, cultural significance, and more detail, frankly, than you bargained for. Here's your host, Ryan Acree and Matthew Essery.
And welcome to another episode of Video Culture. I'm your host, Ryan Acree.
And I'm Matthew Essery.
And on this week's episode, we're talking Guy Ritchie films. Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, and Snatch. So, with one being a really long title, one being very short, they kind of like equal out, right?
Yeah, a little bit. These are basically Guy Ritchie's first two films. And they're very similar. They're basically crime movies, but they're funny and quirky. And they definitely feel like a pair.
Yeah, they definitely do. They definitely, not that they're formulaic, sort of, but they're so similar. They almost could be, you know, like a sequel of one another.
They're kind of like Ramones songs.
Yeah,
where
exactly
the songs are different, but they definitely have a similar structure and a vibe.
Mm-hmm. I can go with that. And then, yeah, and then would you shorten the title? LS2SB? Is that what?
No, I would never do that. I've just always called it Lock, Stock, typically.
Oh, Lock, Stock. I think I was text messaging my friend, and I used that, you know. But anyway, but yeah, I think they very much are the crime comedies. I mean, they're definitely British, like kind of underworld sort of crime, but they really are crime sort of comedy. There are some like comedic moments in it, and it isn't all meant to be just like, you know, it's not like Casino or Goodfellas, you know what I mean? It has a much more sort of lighter tone to it. And I don't mean like lighter tone, like, you know, what was that Billy Crystal film where they were working with gangsters or something like that. I mean, it's not like a...
It's not, you mean Analyze This?
Yeah, like Analyze... It's not like that movie at all.
Yeah, like, it's not a straight comedy because it's still gritty. But it's like this gritty crime movie that also just happens to be really funny.
Yeah.
So it's both. I mean, it's gritty, but yet it's comical at the same time.
And I'll just go ahead and say this now. I mean, I think Guy Ritchie in these movies, I mean, they borrow a lot from Pulp Fiction and, you know, sort of Quentin Tarantino style. Oh, and I'm not saying that they're, you know, Quentin Tarantino could have made these movies, but I definitely see some similarities between, you know, like his films, like Pulp Fiction. I mean, now granted, Tarantino has made a variety of different films, and they all have their own like sort of unique look, and he's a much unique director. But his first, you know, couple of movies with Reservoir Dogs, with you know, with Pulp Fiction, and even somewhat with True Romance, right?
Yeah, I mean that they all had these elements, and they all had comedy in them as well. But really, Guy Ritchie really amps up the comedy. He amps up the quirk. And also, these movies are, and I mean this in the best way possible, they are incredibly British.
Oh yeah,
like they are. I mean, they're so steeped in British culture and a vibe. Like, these movies could not exist in any other part of the world.
No. You could definitely... It's almost like he made it for British culture. Like, he made it for them. We get to enjoy it. We get to, like, be a part of it. But, I mean, I still don't get some of the jokes that are in there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because they're kind of like inside jokes to them.
Yeah, it's very much a foreign film that we just happen to understand the language, you know?
Sometimes. Yeah. Because, yeah, they don't, it's almost like it's not meant for, they don't Americanize it, I guess you would say.
No, it doesn't try to be a mass appealing thing. It's very much niche. It's very much for British audiences. Mm-hmm. Even Snatch, which we'll get to in a bit, which was a bigger worldwide release, is still very British and just steeped in idioms and culture and style.
Mm-hmm.
And he never really was ashamed of that. And I think that's one thing that always made him a very unique filmmaker, was that he was just very okay with making very British films.
Yeah. And very unique way. And I think that, you know, some of the things that he learned from Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, like he just like really improved upon in Snatch. And Snatch is not really like a repeat or like a, it's almost, like I said, like a sequel, but usually a lot of times a sequel like never lives up to the original, but almost like the Snatch is a little bit, it's a bit better in that it's, you know, more fuller developed. The writing is better. The timing is better. The characters are better developed. All those sort of things like just play into it, and you get much more involved in the story.
Yeah,
I think in Snatch. But let's just talk about Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. So just to give a quick synopsis, four Jack the Lads find themselves seriously heavily. Into debt, and East End hard man and his enforcers after a crooked card game, overhearing that their neighbors in the next flat are plotting to hold up a group of out-of-their-depth drug growlers, our heroes decide to stitch up the robbers in turn, in a way that confusion really starts when a pair of antique double-barreled shotguns go missing in a completely different scam. So that was written by Anonymous. That definitely sounds like I probably should have read that in a British accent.
Well, I'm glad you did, because I don't want to offend any of our listeners who may be in Britain with our terrible attempts at British accents.
A drug growler? We would probably call that a drug dealer.
Yeah. I was going to say, it was clearly written by someone who was from Great Britain.
Stitch up the robbers, like, that's another term I would use.
What lovely turns of phrase, though. It's such a musical way of speaking English. But even that synopsis gives you such an idea of how just kind of wonderfully British these movies are.
Mm-hmm.
But it also brings up a good point. We're not going to try to tell you the plot of these films, because...
I tried. I tried to tell somebody. It was like trying to tell my wife. I was like, oh, you got to see this film. Like, oh, what is it about? Oh, well, these four guys. And then I like get involved and I get love. But then there's these other people. And then there's other people. No, wait. And it's just like, it's one of those things that you just have to watch it. Did I lose you? I think I lost Matt.
Ryan, I lost you.
I lost Matt.
I lost you completely for a minute there, man.
Okay. So, well, I'll mark the time.
So I can tell you exactly where I dropped you at. You say you were trying to tell your wife, and you said there's these four guys.
Yeah, I'm trying to tell my wife about this story. I was like, oh, you got to see this movie. Okay, well, tell me about it. And I go, okay, well, it's got these four guys, and they go into debt. They get in this card game. And then they owe money, and then there's these other people, and then there's these other people still shotgun, and like, you get lost in the story trying to tell people. It's not a just like easy plot. It's not a high concept film at all.
No, it's very much about twists and turns, and the way, but both these films, let's just go next out. Both these films, the way they're very similar is they have some basic elements in common. They have huge casts of quirky characters.
They have seedy, quirky characters.
Yes. Criminal characters, and just basically scummy characters.
Yes.
And they have these plots that basically seem disparaging, like they're all separate. But then they interweave in interesting ways until they finally climax at the end, where all these different storylines kind of ram together in the pursuit of one particular thing. You know, the MacGuffin, whatever it may be. And Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, it's really about these two antique shotguns, the titular two smoking barrels, basically. Yeah. And so, but basically you have these different characters who are basically doing their own things. You know, they basically end up just intersecting with each other, running into each other, coming into conflict with each other in really twisty, weird ways, all in pursuit of a MacGuffin, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really both films. So if we try to tell you moment by moment what happened, we're going to be here for 3 hours because they're so tightly plotted and they kind of interweave and go through all these different little plot points. And it becomes very layered and dense after a while.
Yeah, the storyline, you just kind of get lost in the storyline of who does what when and who gets involved when and who does what and who underdoes what. And but in the end, I mean, let's just face it, like, one of the things that I really, you know, just storyline-wise that I really liked about both films is that the seediest characters, right, like the worst of the worst of the worst, like the characters that you don't like, they wind up getting it in the end, right?
Yeah.
And then the kind of like the somewhat other seedy characters that are kind of floating on top that are like somewhat seedy, but like almost like normal, they're the ones who wind up like kind of the victor of it all.
Yeah.
The movie, and just by happenstance, but not by them doing anything, but it's just like, you know,
yeah,
they just got like really lucky.
Yeah. The movie has some morality to it where the truly bad people are punished. And the ones who are kind of just, who have hearts of gold, so to speak, come out unscathed. It's that makes them, that keeps them feeling fun and light. And right. Which is good because again, these movies are supposed to be, are meant to be fun. And they're funny. There's so much comedy in Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. And it's got just a great cast. There's so many people in this movie who went on to be bigger names and other things. Like, most notably, this was the film debut of Jason Statham.
Yeah.
Like, he's not the main
character. Yeah, he plays Bacon.
He plays Bacon. What a great character name, Bacon.
And, well, they all have really great names. I mean, even one of the guys' name is Soap. I mean, you have Eddie and Tom as like the other, like, you know, group of guys, but then you also have Barry the Baptist, Harry Hatchet Lonsdale, you know what I mean? Nick the Greek, like they're all
like these character names, these cool like pirate names, basically.
Yeah, yeah. One guy's named Dog, like,
yeah.
It's just like such a fun cast, a group. That plays all these people. But yeah, Jason, I was surprised to see that this was, you know, Jason Statham's first film.
Yeah, and he's not the main character. He's just one of the four kind of protagonists. But it's really an ensemble, and he gets a lot of good moments. Like he gets a lot of the funny lines. But he's not the main focus. But you can clearly see that he's got something. A lot of the guys went on to do other things, like Jason Fleming, the ginger, one of the group. He's been in numerous films, like he's in all kinds of things. Even been in an X-Men movie. So, like he's had a very big career. And Dexter Fletcher, who plays Soap, he's kind of the most normal of the poor protagonists, the one who's the most clean and straight laced. He went on to be a very successful director. He directed Rocket Man, the Elton John biopic.
Mm.
So he did another great movie called Eddie the Eagle, and he actually once Bryan Singer left Bohemian Rhapsody, when that was going through all the controversy with Bohemian Rhapsody, he was actually the director who stepped in to finish the film. Like about 25% of Bohemian Rhapsody is actually directed by the guy who played Soap in this movie.
He was the cook guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, he's cool. He's a very gifted director who really knows a lot about music. So
yeah, I got lost in their names. I didn't know anybody's name. I mean, I knew Chris and like Barry the Baptist and like, you know, Harry was easy. Oh, and Sting is in this movie too.
Yeah, yeah, Sting as really the main guy's dad. He only pops up for a few scenes, but he's good when he's in it.
Yeah.
But so much of the film is really just these characters just bantering and plotting. There's a heist at one point.
Yeah.
Some double crossing and, you know, weird quirky characters. Great, you know, needle drops. Like, there's some great use of Iggy and the Stooges. Right. And just so much cool music. And it's got a nice gritty vibe to it. But mostly, I think it's such a funny movie.
Yeah, I think you and I watched the director's cut.
We did, because
and the director's cut even has like some extra like funnier scenes, and it goes into a little bit of backstory as well to kind of like enhance the kind of story. It's a little longer. It's a little closer to 2 hours, like with it. As the director's cut, but in one of the scenes, they're walking up, like the four guys are, or no, the main guy, like what is his name, Tom.
Yeah.
Jason Fleming. Dom goes to play the card game that they all like chipped in, right? And so the other three guys, Bacon, Soap, and Eddie, they go around the corner to the corner pub to wait until after the game is over. And they're walking up to this pub, and like some guy just like straight darts out of the pub, just like with his coat on fire.
Yeah.
Just like yelling and screaming. They're all just like looking like, what the heck is that? And they just kind of shrug and then just like kind of go in. I mean, that's the kind of movie that it is.
Yeah, there's a great line, and I'm going to butcher trying to – it's always hard to repeat funny lines, but Jason Statham has a line in the bar that kills me. He asks for a refreshing cocktail, and the bartender brings him this huge fruity drink, and he's like, what the hell is that? The guy goes, you asked for a cocktail. He's like, that's a rainforest. I could fall in love with an orangutan in that thing. That line kills me every time.
Yeah, he's like, well, we're a Hawaiian bar. He goes, why don't you just bring me a pint? You know, and he's like, well, we're a tiki bar.
Yeah, that's not what we do here. And he's like, I'll take a Diet Coke.
Oh, yeah. Just absolutely funny.
And then there's so many things like that. Like when Soap is talking about how he's going to bring knives to their heist because the guns they have don't work. He's like, guns for show and knives for a pro. And they're all like, I'm really concerned about you, Soap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or even when the drug dealers are about to get robbed, they're shooting at the guys with the pellet gun.
Yeah.
You know, it's like shooting them in the neck with a BB gun. Oh, it just reminded me like of something out of Monty Python or something like that.
Yeah, it's got that real dry British wit to it, but it applies it to like this thing you wouldn't normally associate with Britain, and that's, you know, again, gangsters and drug dealers, and it works so well. But the filmmaking is rough, and
the filmmaking is rough. I want to talk about that for a second because I want to talk about, you know, it like we said, it is gritty. It is in like England. Every day looks like it's like just overcast, and you can like definitely see like the film grain and the film stock. You know what I mean? It doesn't look like pretty at all. And none of these characters look very pretty at all. Like they look very like sort of raw. Like they're not wearing makeup. I mean, it's just kind of how they are. And, it's just like a very, you know, it's almost like music video-esque. I don't know what to say. It's like very sort of like quick, sort of cut shots.
The editing is very rapid,
sort of odd angles at times.
Yeah, you can tell that he's really experimenting with where to put the camera and how and shutter speeds and things like that. Like you can tell he's really trying to figure out his visual style.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, he's trying to figure out that storytelling element. Like, how are you going to have the camera like tell the story of this scene? And it's really interesting to watch, you know, some of that too. You kind of get lost though, and like where you are in the scene because you're supposed to be like a fly on the wall. And it's usually when they shoot, you know, it's almost like a stage, right? Where you have like a 2D kind of plane and you never break that 2D plane. Well, he breaks that 2D plane. I'm going to tell you right now.
Yeah, he does it a lot. And in Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, it's a little bit rougher in places. But to me, there's such an energy to it. Like, it's got kind of, and this is an overused way of saying it, but it's got a real, like, punk rock quality to it to me. Like, it feels a little bit chaotic and a little bit, like, rougher on the edges. But to me, it makes the movie feel alive. Like, mm-hmm. it's got a real, like, a real, like, urgency to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, almost like a little bit of unease. It helps, like,
yeah.
the tension. You feel the tension, and you feel it kind of pulling you along.
Yeah.
Like, kind of as you're watching the film.
Even though it's funny, it still feels dangerous. Like, it feels like there's stakes. You know, like, people could actually mm-hmm. get hurt.
Well, the other thing I want to mention, too, is, like, because this is Britain, and I don't know if this is just because this is British or if this is just because, like, this is the way that Guy Ritchie wanted to make the movie. But even though, I mean, both films are rated R. There's a lot of language in it and a lot of foul language. These are gangsters doing gangster stuff, right? So there's gambling, there's shooting, there's threatening of people getting their fingers cut off, all this kind of stuff, right? And, but yet, there's not actually a lot of violence in the film, to be honest, right?
No, like, not really. It's so much of it is implied because violence isn't funny. Not really. I mean, it can be occasionally. Like, I mean, Tarantino has shown that. I know we reference him a lot, but he showed that in Pulp Fiction, places like that. But in general, violence is sobering. Like, mm-hmm. you know, it ends up making you. It's like when things get serious or when things get violent. And this movie, even though it has kind of a chaotic energy to it, it's still fun. It's hard to explain, but it's dingy and gritty, but it never once stops being fun.
Well, I mean, I just know that, like, British television and, like, British audiences, they do not tolerate violence like they do here in the United States.
No, it's
like,
definitely...
Right, because, like, on television, I mean, you can watch different shows, you know, CSI, you know, NYPD, like, you know, any sort of, like, cop show, there's almost more violence in that than half of this movie.
It's true. I mean, like I said, I mean, there's a little bit of blood, but I mean, but you never see, like, someone getting shot. It's always the aftermath of someone being shot, really.
Yeah. Almost everybody that gets shot is get shot off screen, and that goes for both movies.
Yes.
It's very intentional, which is really amazing. It's really amazing. I was really, like, kind of thrown off for a second because I was like, wait. So it's almost like, you know how we talk about Westerns and we talk about, you know, Westerns have, you know, shoot 'em up, right?
Yeah.
And then it's like, you know, they shoot the guy grabs his heart. And he's like, oh, it kind of falls over, right? There's no blood. There's no, like, gory stuff or whatever. It's just like they just kind of drag him off and that's just kind of it, right?
Yeah.
It's almost kind of like that, but it's almost like you don't see it. Like, you see the guy, like, point a gun and, like, fire. You know he's there, but you don't see anything.
Yeah, it's so different than how we do it. Like, I was watching a TV show just last night where a guy gets shot in the head, and you literally see it all in camera. Like, the guy gets shot in the head is really close to the camera. The guy who shoots him is in the background, and you literally see the guy's skull, like, pop off.
Yeah, and if you watch the movie Die Hard, any of the Die Hard movies, you know, a lot of people say, well, you know, McClane lives through them all. Why do they call it Die Hard? Because look, man, every single bad guy died in a really horrible, nasty way.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, it's and very, you it's all a very get to American watch it all. Thing, it's a
big, yeah, right.
Yeah, it's we are way more okay with violence here in America than we are with language. Like they say, you know, the C word in Britain, like, it's no big deal. Oh, yeah. But but you can't do that here. You do that here, it's an automatic X rating, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, I mean, that actually happened in Snatch. They had to kind of take it out. But anyway. Yeah. That goes for the other movie. But yeah, this movie, true. I mean, it's still I think it's in my notes, like, says the F bomb 125 times.
It's definitely used frequently. But to me, because the accents are so appealing that you don't it doesn't hit very hard. It's not like a Richard Pryor film. You know,
well,
it's
go ahead.
I would say because it's something about the accent gives it a musical quality. So to me, the language doesn't feel as harsh, even though it is really harsh. It doesn't feel that way.
Well, even like when Barry the Baptist is yelling at the two goons that he hired to steal the guns. I mean, he's got this English accent. You don't feel really bad. I'm like sitting there going, what if he's yelling at me that way? It's because he's got an English accent. It's almost kind of funny. It's like, you better go off and do that. You know, it's like we didn't grow up with the English accent, so it just like kind of sounds like kind of fun. We and, just, you know, I just want to look at him and go, okay, governor. You know,
it's because Monty Python ruined the English accent for Americans. It really did.
You can't sound serious.
Yeah,
you know, it's just like it's hard for us to hear kind of a serious accent. So yeah, it's just kind of funny.
So obviously, we both liked Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels a great deal. What was your favorite moment? What was the moment that you want to rewind and savor?
That's a hard one. I really think the scene where they're where the sleeping girl like pops up with that air assault rifle and just like takes out like
That's a great little surprise moment when you think that you don't realize the girl's there in the background. She jumps up with a machine gun and kills one of the bad guys. That's a real like moment, you know.
You know what's funny about that scene, and I'll go ahead and mention it now, is that it's almost like, you know, Quentin Tarantino did, you know, one time in Hollywood or whatever, right? That scene reminded me a lot of that scene.
Yeah.
The final scene.
It's just so excessive. Yeah. Like she really murders that guy with that machine gun.
Yeah, I know, right? But it's almost like, you know, there's a lot of several nods to like Quentin Tarantino, and that scene was kind of like, now that I watch it, I'm like, oh, so the scene in there was almost like a kind of a nod to Guy Ritchie.
Really kind of I think that Guy Ritchie was definitely inspired by Tarantino, and I think all these guys kind of came up in Tarantino's wake, and Tarantino's taken inspiration from a lot of those guys. A lot of these guys all hit the Sundance scene around the same time period. I mean, Lock, Stock came out in 1998, so that was only a few years after Pulp Fiction. So Guy Ritchie was really Tarantino's contemporary.
And let's be honest, there were a lot of Pulp Fiction copies that Hollywood tried to make.
Oh yeah,
they did make. I wouldn't say try. I mean, yeah. they did make them, and some of them were.
Yeah, well,
one though
is great.
It has such its own style, and it has its own thing going for it. You know, you can't call it a copy.
You really can't because Tarantino's movies aren't this kind of carefree. There's a lightness to these films that has never been there in any of Tarantino's films. Mm-hmm. You know, Tarantino movies always have a sense of impending doom.
Mm-hmm.
Like even his happiest films still feel like things are going to go bad at any moment. I never really feel that way in Guy Ritchie films. I've always feel like it always feels like a romp. You know, that's a word that's not really used a lot to describe things anymore. But they're playful. I mean, these movies are playful.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And you never know where they're going to go or how it's going to wind up. I mean, it's always like a fun. Sort of travel to go through all these different cast of characters. You know what I mean? It's really a smorgasbord of just like this underworld. You know what I mean? And like I said, they're so well written. What was your favorite moment?
My favorite scene is honestly it's more of a montage. I love after the protagonists the four friends get the money from the robbers and they think they're in the clear and they go to the bar and celebrate and they have that montage of them drinking and just horsing around. To me, that's one of the best examples of like drinking and acting a fool with your buddies in a bar that I've ever seen in any movie. To me, it reminds me of getting drunk in bars with my buddies when I was in college. Uh-huh. So it's just so much fun to watch them be silly and goof around. To me, it's just such a fun little montage. It's probably my favorite sequence in the entire movie.
Yeah, yeah, because they finally like. Got the money to pay them, you know, pay it off. They finally, like, they were like, oh, we're actually in the clear. We're going to be able to pay off Harry, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, and they're just they're celebrating having fun. Like, that's when the movie really embraces its fun nature. And it's a joy to watch.
Yeah. What was any moments that you wanted to fast forward through?
You know, not I really love this movie. I love both of them. So I will say that I wouldn't change a lot. I will say I didn't like the director's cut as much as I liked the theatrical version. Some of the additions I felt were a little unnecessary. But since you haven't seen it, it's not really worth going into what those were. But sometimes it felt a little longer in places than it needed to be. I had wanted to see the director's cut for a while. That's why I chose it to be the copy that you and I watched. And I want us to be on the same page for once. Because I know we've had a few moments where one of us watched the shorter version, one of us watched the longer version. I want to make sure we avoided that this time.
Yeah.
But it felt a little long in places, but I can't really explain why in a way that makes sense. Because it's not like one scene is objectively bad to me. Because I like it all. I like all the characters. Uh-huh. I like everything, how it all plays out. Yeah. I think it's so much fun. I wouldn't really change anything about it.
I, for one, did not like the questionable ending, like the decide for yourself ending.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like when you go through all of that, it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like you're wading through, you know, the stuff. It's enjoyable. Yeah. It's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like paddling a boat, right? Paddling a boat, it's hard work, but it's fun because you're out on the lake or you're out on the river or something like that. Yeah. So, and then you want something at the end. You want a big payoff at the end. And then it's kind of like you kind of get a payoff and then it kind of goes back and you're like, no, wait, no, yeah. Where are you going? And then after that, then the same thing happens again. Then you're like, oh, wait, here's another payoff. And then it just like drops you off. And you're like,
and it sort of ends on a little on like a little cheeky British visual gag with him like the phone in his mouth reaching for the guns. Deciding if he's going to drop the guns or answer the phone. Yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying. It's very cheeky and it's a little bit kind of mean to end it on that cliffhanger. Yeah. But I like to think that they got the guns, they got the money for them, and lived happily ever after.
Well, that's the only way that you can reconcile it, because if you think that the guns fell in the Thames River, you know,
it was all for nothing. Yeah,
yeah, it's all for nothing. Well, yeah. I will say this: it still ended with Harry not on their back. Like, they paid him off and Harry wasn't on their back. So they still have something, you know, good about it until Chris showed up and showed him, you know.
Oh, yeah. We didn't talk about the glory that is Big Chris in this movie. Speaking of guys, this is the first movie from Vinnie Jones, the gigantic former British rugby player who you know from easily 100 different movies. Like, you know Vinnie Jones. Just Google his name. You'll see his face. Like, oh, yeah, it's that guy. He basically plays a mean British guy in everything he's in. And he's really great in this as a guy who loves his son. And he's kind of like a bastard with a heart of gold.
Yes.
So, yeah, just a great performance for me. You can really see why he turned that one role into a career that's still going strong today.
Yeah, I mean, you can when you look him up on Wikipedia – it talks about his, you know, career statistics as a rugby player, you know, playing for Wimbledon and Chelsea and Leeds United and all through the 90s there. So definitely. But he did make his debut in Lock, Stock and Six Uncle Barris. He's been in Gone in 60 Seconds, Swordfish, X-Men: The Last Stand. She's the Man. So yeah, she's been in, he's been in a few different movies and he's also in Snatch. He's one of the few characters that, that also is in, Snatch as well.
Yeah. Because of course, you know, Guy Ritchie was going to use him again because he's such a unique presence and he fits that vibe so well, but let's go ahead and talk about Snatch.
Yeah. I mean, cause that's another movie. That's another moment that you could probably savor is that, you know, where he's bashing that dude's head in against the door, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just like, it's so satisfying because that guy was just like, to me, almost like seedier than Harry, you know what I mean?
And the guy getting his head bashed in, that was obviously a moment that Guy Ritchie savored because he references that scene in the introduction for Vinnie Jones's character in Snatch.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So it was like, oh, we're going to call that guy. All right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, fantastic movie. Oh, and I also want to mention just lastly the soundtrack. I mean, the soundtrack for both movies is just by far excellent, but it includes James Brown, Robbie Williams, Dusty Springfield, The Stooges, The Castaways, The Stone Roses. I mean, everything from kind of like, you know, modern, like sort of techno to like James Brown to just like, you know, kind of punk rock, The Stooges, and, you know, punk, you know, The Castaways, which are, you know, also kind of punk. Yeah. So it's just like so many different vibes. And it, to me, it's all kind of like, I love how he put it, how it's almost like almost all underground music, too.
Yeah. It fits the vibe of the film so well. Mm-hmm. It's a killer soundtrack. And as you're listening to the movie, you're like, man, the music in this is really good. Every time I watch it, it hits me how great the soundtrack is. So yeah. Many great needle drops.
Yes. Yeah, so great. And never, like, overused either. Like, I don't really feel like he overused them at all.
No, really, that's the one thing he really nailed right out of the gate is the use of soundtrack music. Yeah.
Right. All right. So, but moving on to Snatch. So, Snatch was made in 2000.
So, 2 years also, later. Yeah.
Yeah. Directed and produced by the same guy. Directed by Guy Ritchie. Produced by Matthew Vaughn. And sort of I'll give you the synopsis here. Turkish and his close friend / accomplice, Tommy, get pulled into the world of match fixing by the notorious Bricktop. Things get complicated when the boxer they had lined up gets badly beaten by Mickey, a pikey, a slang term for an Irish gypsy, who comes into the equation after Turkish, an unlicensed boxing promoter, wants to buy a caravan off the Irish gypsies. Then they try to convince Mikey not only to fight for them, but to lose for them too. While all this is going on, a huge diamond heist takes place, and a fistful of motley characters enter the story, including Cousin Avey, Boris the Blade, Frankie Fourfingers, Bullet Tooth Tony. Things go from bad to worse, and it all comes about the money, the guns, and the damned dog. So that was also like a mouthful.
Yeah. Again, go back to just great names like Frankie Fourfingers, Cousin Avey, Boris the Blade. What great like caricature names.
Bullet Tooth Tony.
Yeah. I mean, it's just fun stuff, man. And this time, you can tell that Richie really knew what he had in Statham, because this time Statham is way more front and center. It's him and being teamed up with another guy named Stephen Graham, who mm-hmm. Stephen Graham went on to be a big part of a show called Boardwalk Empire. So he's had a really active acting career for years and years after this. He was last seen in the last Tom Hanks movie that came out this year, or came out last year, called Greyhound. He mm-hmm. he basically was the second lead in that. The casting has always been Guy Ritchie's strong suit. The movie is just filled with great character actors. Mm-hmm. But he really saw that Statham was going to be a star, clearly. Because even though this movie stars Brad Pitt and Benicio del Toro and Dennis Farina and all these guys, Statham is probably in it more than anybody else. And he really kills it, man. He's so funny in this again.
Yeah, well, Vinnie Jones plays Big Chris in Lock, Stock, and plays a guy named Bullet Tooth Tony in Snatch, but they're sort of assumed as they're the same character, right?
It's they're basically
the same.
Well, right? Like Bullet Tooth Tony's a little bit meaner version of Big Chris, you know.
Yeah, not as I don't know, like a little more seedier character.
Yeah.
Right? So not as on the straight and narrow, or I guess you would say. Jason Statham, Alan Ford, Vinnie Jones, and Jason Fleming all return, but as different characters. So Jason Statham, in Snatch, is the main character, plays Turkish. And Alan Ford, who played just like a barback or something like that. Yeah. Like he played
he's basically the narrator in Lock, Stock. Yeah.
Yeah. He's the narrator. So he's actually the sort of the main bad guy, Bricktop Pulford, who does just like an excellent job.
Yeah. I mean, he is like great
so
in this movie.
Fantastic as this villain.
Yeah. I wish I could do that accent, because his accent is so unique. His British accent is so unique, and his accent is not humorous. Like he's scary.
He is scary.
Yeah. Like
when he is definitely scary.
Like when he just like when he said that little speech about he goes, do you know what nemesis means?
Yeah, when like, he goes into all this about, you know, feeding the pigs to the
feeding
a dead person to the pigs and all that kind of
stuff.
Like
Jesus, man, you are frightening. Stay away from me. Yeah.
No, he should have won a freaking Oscar for that performance. He's so good. He steals the show and like he steals the scene in every scene he's in.
Well, because he keeps saying things that should be kind of silly or fun, but because he's terrifying, it's not. It's like it's such a weird dichotomy. Like he'll say things like goody gumdrops, or someone will ask him for if he wants sugar in his tea, and he goes, no, like, yeah, I don't want any sugar. I'm sweet enough. But with this scary accent and his like terrifying look, it makes your skin crawl, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost like kind of jokerish, you know what I mean?
A little bit, yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Jason Fleming finds Darren. But yeah, then you also have some other guys in here. I mean, Brad Pitt plays Mickey O'Neill.
I think it's one of Brad Pitt's best. Like, I think it's one of Brad Pitt's best performances as this guy. You just cannot understand what he's saying.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I understand. You know, like Dax. Yeah. Like Dax. Do I like what?
And he
can, like what? Dogs.
Yeah, I like dogs. Yeah.
Oh, dogs. Yeah. Oh, I like dogs.
Yeah.
Dogs.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, and then also Dennis Farina is also in this movie too.
Dennis Farina, yeah, and again, Benicio del Toro is Frankie Fourfingers.
Yeah, Benicio del Toro
with a weird accent himself. It's like he wanted to have his own weird accent for some reason.
Yeah, even though he already has a weird accent, he like came up with another one.
Yeah, like he has like this weird like semi-Jew, like this like stereotypical Jewish accent on top of his already accent. So it's like this weird like mix of accents. And there's another gag that I love. There's a little funny thing that just cracks me up every time. Is Frankie Fourfingers is kind of the guy who can put the plot in motion because he's got a gambling problem.
Right,
and anytime anyone mentions gambling around him, they cut to these freeze frames of him, these like still shots of him gambling in Vegas, and then losing horribly, and he's like mugging for the camera as about how horrified he is by the fact that he's losing, and they're playing Viva Las Vegas as the soundtrack music, and they're doing these little bursts, and it cracks me up every time. Such a funny little stinger throughout his scenes, and it just he cracks me up so much.
Well, even there's that one scene where he's on the phone, and like every time they cut back to him, he's like at the tailor shop. But every time they cut back to him, he's like in a different outfit.
Yeah,
and it's like he didn't cut away that long, but you know what I mean.
it's just these little bits of visual comedy because Guy Ritchie's gotten more confident in being a storyteller. But he's also, because he's gotten more confident, he's gotten more daring in what he's willing to try visually. And it makes Snatch is a really chaotic movie. It really, visually, it is chaotic. I mean, like, so much is happening all the time. And it just crackles with energy.
Yeah. I mean, even the scenes that happen, like, in the car and all that kind of stuff. Like, that they have to shoot, like, you know, in the car as they're driving around and stuff like that. Because the whole thing is chaos, right? The whole thing is just like absolute chaos, and you're dealing with a whole bunch of like, once again, like seedy characters, right? You're dealing with all this stuff, and they wind up in a mess of trouble, and then, you know, how they're going to dig themselves out of it, and they're going to be, you know, owed to this, you know, guy, but they've got to get out of it somehow. You know what I mean?
And, yeah. Again, it's just all these different like plots kind of interweave and overlap, and things get worse for our protagonist. Right. And
yeah, because these other people don't care about the fight, but they want the diamond. But they don't know about these other people don't know about the diamond, but they want the fight. You know, so it's just like these people don't know, these people don't, and these people. This is how they are involved, and all that kind of stuff, and all the storylines, like you said, just kind of overlap after a while.
And you don't really know how it's going. What's fun about both these films, you don't really know how they're going to wrap up, but it's fun to watch, see how that all kind of ties everything together in a bow at the end. To me, that's one thing that's a real joyous thing about these movies is they're so obviously well plotted and well thought out. Like when it wraps up, it's so satisfying to see all the strings converge into like this beautiful bow at the end of the film, you know?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Was there any moments that you wanted to savor and watch again?
You know, I sound like a broken record, but I really love these movies. I love Snatch more than I love Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels because it feels like such a perfection of the formula from the first film. Uh-huh. I love everything about it, but I'll tell you, man, I absolutely adore every scene with Brad Pitt. He's so funny in this film. I could talk about things I like about this movie all day long. I will say my favorite one-liner in the entire movie is there's a scene where Turkish, Jason Statham character, he notices that Tommy has a gun in his pants waistband. He goes, "Jesus, Tommy, what's that?" He goes, "Turkish, it's a gun, Turkish." He's like, "A gun for what?" He goes, "For protection." And he goes, "Protection from what?" "The Germans." And that line, I don't know, but something about that is the Germans thing. That's a line I've kept in my head for the 20 years since I've seen this movie, and it'll occasionally just pop into my head, and I'll just giggle to myself.
Yeah. Well, because you get the idea, like, you know, everybody is, that everybody's, like, kind of criminal, right? You kind of get the idea as everybody criminal, but you quickly realize, like, all Tommy's doing is he's running a gym, right? He's just
basically,
you know, yeah. He's just running the gym to fix the fights. You know what I mean? That's all he's doing.
And yeah, so it's like, why does Tommy need a gun? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, because he never gets into trouble. I mean, Tommy's like he only in that one scene where they come back to like bash the casinos or whatever. Does he even like have the gun? Because he realizes too, like the gun doesn't even work. But
yeah.
My favorite scenes are the one with like Tyrone, the getaway driver, and what's his name, Sol, and is it Vinny?
Yeah.
Where all three of them, just like together. I mean, it's almost like the Three Stooges. It is. But they're not really beating up on each other. It's just the way that they talk to each other.
Yeah.
And the way that they carry it out. Because they're like the three like dumbest criminals, you know, in the world. And just their antics and, you know, just their interaction and stuff like that was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. They're definitely the most slapsticky thing in the entire film. Everything about this movie is so fun. Like, there's lots of comedy. They really ramp up the comedy in Snatch, and everything about it. To me, I laugh so much watching this movie every time. And I hadn't seen it probably in 5 or 6 years, and I just had such a great time going back and rewatching it, and remembering just how great this movie was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, like when he runs into the van, you know, he's trying to park.
Yeah.
It's like, how did you not see that?
It was a funny angle.
It's a funny angle.
He goes, "It's behind you, Tyrone."
You use the mirror. It's in a funny angle.
Yeah.
Oh, it just that cracks me up. Their dialogue just like cracked me up, like so great. And even when they're trying to get out of the place, like the betting place, and they can't get out of the door and they think they're stuck, and like Tyrone just like pushes open the door.
So why are you guys on the floor? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. Any scenes you would take out?
Honestly, not a one, man. I think both these are damn near perfect. I really do.
Yeah, and then this one I much more enjoyed the ending for sure. I think that Guy Ritchie like learned his lesson a little bit with, you know, how he wrote it and how he wrote the characters and how he wrote the ending, and I think he was a lot more thoughtful about it. To really have a nice payoff. So
because the good guys truly win. Like, I mean, the people who are doing the right thing really triumph over the bad guys in this one. And it's very satisfying. Because it's not just randomness. They actually outsmart Bricktop. The good guy characters, I'm not going to spoil it for anyone who hasn't seen it, because the joy is in the journey for these movies. But the way they outsmart Bricktop and get out of their situation is very satisfying, and it's very unexpected.
Yeah. And it's also just, it's like, oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, it just makes you want to cheer at the end when you realize what's happened, you know?
Yeah. Also, like you were talking about, Benicio Toro's like little cutaway, like little shots or whatever.
Yeah.
I was thinking the same thing, like when, Piranha's, character, when he's like in New York and has to go to London, yeah. You know, he does that scene. He does the shot where he like takes him Alka-Seltzer and gets on the plane, like flies. It's just like really super quick cuts of, you know, and then it's like, boom, he's there in London.
Yeah. Do you have anything to clear? Yeah. Don't go to effing England.
Yeah.
There's a he's got a line in there, and I can't say without swearing, so I'll just mention what it is.
Okay.
But when he first shows up in London, he goes, "I don't like to travel anywhere that doesn't involve sandy beaches and little umbrellas with like our little drinks with umbrellas in them." And the guy's like, "But we have beaches here." And he goes, "Yeah, who the F wants to see them?" And he says they were so fast. Dennis Farina, he was a national treasure. He's such a great character actor. He was in movies like Out of Sight, and he was on the TV show Homicide. Like everyone else, he's phenomenal in this movie. He's so good. Everyone just nails that snappy banter and that rapid dialogue in this movie. And it's just, like, I mean, we're not really quoting it because you can't quote it without swearing a lot. And we try to keep this podcast, you know, family friendly. But there's so many quotable, funny bits in this film. It's just, it's honestly chocked full of stuff like that.
Yeah, he's definitely got that, like, kind of Chicago, like, you know, don't mess around with me, you know, kind of attitude. And it's just so great. I mean, he was, you know, like in Get Shorty, and you know, yeah, he was a bunch of different movies where he just, you know, plays that kind of guy where he's just like a little bit shady, but, you know,
but you can't help but like him because he's...
Yeah, but he's a likable... Like, he's a likable guy.
Yeah, like, you can totally get how he could be successful at whatever he's doing because you would want to partner with him, most likely, you know? Because you'd want to hang out with him.
Yep. Yeah. So, I mean, I can't really think of any sort of scene that I would take out myself. Like I said, I think the violence even in this movie is even less than Lock, Stock.
I think so too. Yeah.
And it's so much more like off screen, like I said, even though they're shady characters, it's just, you know, kind of fun. Like everybody, they get just like, you know, shot as off screen. And I can't think of a thing I would toss out.
Well, the movie is so densely plotted. If you start pulling out any scenes, then parts of it would start to not make sense. You know.
Yeah, but I mean, there's always. I mean, you know as well as I do. We watch a lot of these movies, and we watch and we go, this is. You know, we have to watch this, or like this is not. This is kind of boring, or this is kind of unnecessary, or this is kind of whatever. You know, never in any of these two movies do you feel like you're bored.
No, and obviously Guy Ritchie has had some clunkers in his filmography, but these movies are great, and when he tries to do these kinds of movies again, like he'll go back to this style every now and then. He's become a much bigger director. I mean, he directed the live action Aladdin. He's become a big name director. So he doesn't do these kind of movies a lot. But when he decides to go back to them, they are always, to me, they're always a joy. I find them so fun. And because like, he really gets this world, he really knows how to make these movies, and they sing with him. They're such well-oiled machines of like movie chaos.
Yeah, I agree. You could almost take these movies, and you know, you could probably make it boring by doing an episode and carrying you through like a whole season of it. But it's so much more fun to have it all in like one sitting. And just see all the good parts of it. So I just, you know, that's the way I look at it, right?
Yeah.
All right, so let's go through the facts.
Well, let's do it,
get to the facts. Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. The movie was dedicated to Lenny McLean, who played Barry the Baptist. He died of lung cancer exactly 1 month before the movie's premiere in the UK.
Oh, I had no idea. That's sad.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's why we don't see him in other movies. Jason Statham has a real in real life worked as a street vendor, similar to the character that he plays in the opening of the movie. So that's why he looks, you know.
So yeah, he's very convincing. Yeah,
very convincing. And on Vinnie Jones, he had just been released from police custody. He had been arrested for beating up his neighbor. So yeah, just in true rugby guy fashion, right? When Nick the Greek and Tom are haggling over the price of the stereo, Nick says, all right, keep your Allens on. The Allens in question is Cockney rhyming slang for short for Alan Wicker. Alan Wicker equals knickers. So
yeah, we didn't talk about Cockney rhyming slang. Let's take a brief aside to talk about Cockney rhyming slang for a second.
Anybody's gonna have to look up Cockney rhyming slang.
It's fascinating.
Popularized in the U.S. by Austin Powers. And was it Goldmember, I think? Because
Michael Caine does it a little bit in Goldmember, yeah.
Yeah. And so, but basically it was born out of the Cockney, you know, like prison and the, you know, to kind of talk in code. These, you know, the prisoners would talk in this code, right? Well, the code got picked up by the bobbies, which were the cops, right? And so they, you know, so it just kind of became like a vernacular that a lot of people like learned that it just became a slang of that part of the world.
Yep.
And I mean, so Mike Myers' dad was a bobby, and that's how he learned it, and that's where like Mike Myers kind of brought it about.
Yeah, I'll give you a few examples so people can picture what we're talking about. Like one thing they might say instead of saying the word, instead of saying "Would you like to have a look?" they would say "Would you fancy a butcher's?" And they say "butcher's" for look because butcher's hook look,
right?
Or they say the idea of let's go over here. Let's go over up these apples and pears stairs. So instead of saying stairs, I may say apples and pears. Because, again, pears rhymes with stairs. It's really weird and random.
Yeah, like, it's a rhyming, it's kind of like rhyming song. Like bacon and eggs means legs. Plates of meat means feet. There's tons of rhyming slang translators that you can look up. And you and your friends can kind of like learn it and kind of talk, you know. And so, yeah. So it's
pretty
really
fun,
Yeah, and a lot of people know sort of the common ones, like you said, and this, you know, like knickers or something like that, like they say, you know, keep your Allens and knickers. So there is some like Cockney slang that's used in this movie. And like I said, in Austin Powers, it's like they make kind of a deal of it, right? Like it's kind of like slow and it's kind of like, they kind of bring you in, but in this movie, it's like they just kind of like bam, bam. It's in the script, and then they just move on. They're like, "What did he say?"
Well, and you know, Statham has even used it in other movies. Like I know he used it in the Crank movies, which are very much Western American action films. But he actually used the phrase "strawberry tart" to mean heart. Like mm-hmm. he's talking about like his heart in the film, and he's. He used the phrase "strawberry tart," and they actually explained to put a subtitle in Crank. It's Crank mm-hmm. 2, where when he says it, they actually subtitle what he's talking about.
Go ahead.
I just think that's an example of he just carries that with him. He doesn't do it a lot anymore. He's become more and more mainstream, but there was a time when he would actually use that in other roles too.
Mm-hmm. And then in the movie, they do refer to Nick the Greek as Nick the Bubble because Bubble and. Bubble and Squeak equals Greek.
Yeah. So. See, it's to me, I find it super fun and fascinating. I've always been fascinated by Cockney rhyming slang.
Yeah. It is very fun. I mean, this goes beyond just like, you know, car park and, you know, crisps and stuff like that. Like, this is a totally different, I mean, it's not even the same thing. Like, how do you think of Bubble? Or Bubble and Squeak meaning Greek. Like, why does that even make any sense?
Yeah, it's
so odd.
It takes a long time to get used to. And I only know a little bit. And it's something mm-hmm. I've actually I've actually read about Off and On for probably since I first saw Lockstock back in 98, and I still only know a few phrases here and there. And it's impossible to work it into normal conversation because no one knows what the hell you're talking about here in America.
Yeah, like if I say apples, you're not thinking pears, right?
Yeah.
Like, all right, the bar that is used is JD's Bar. In the movie, it's really called Vic Naylor's, and it is exactly as it's seen in the film. Apart from the sign on the front, of course, it is situated in an area of London called Farringdon, and it's opposite the old Smithfield Meat Market. Like I said, the F word was used 125 times. Guy Ritchie, that name sounds familiar to some of you. That's because he was married to pop singer Madonna in 2000. She initially contacted him because she was such a big fan of the soundtrack and got in touch with him. And they headed off and got married and got divorced in 2008.
So yeah, and they had a couple of kids together too, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, and it was a very expensive divorce. But anyway, the film's original. Did you know about the original ending? By the way, I wanted to ask.
I don't actually, or I may have at one time and have just kind of forgotten, but. But being asked right now, I don't know what you're talking about. So
okay, so the film's original ending had the four lads walking off with the money, with Big Chris and his son about to follow them to retrieve it. This was changed due to negative test screenings, and according to Nick Moran, Guy Ritchie scribbled a new ending on the back of a cigarette packet, and they actually had to go back and reshoot that whole bar scene at the end where Big Chris comes in and talks to him and stuff.
Basically tells him that the guns are worth money and he's gonna take the cash as a way of saying, you know, we're square, which is good because then again that makes you really get that Big Chris is a decent guy, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, because he was like, and then he said, I took a little bit for myself, and then they opened the bag. He's like, nothing except for the book, right?
So, yeah.
So this movie, I mean, it made a lot of money. I mean, budget was $1.35 million. Box office made $28.1 million.
It was a big hit, yeah.
Yeah, it was a big hit, especially for like an independent film. I mean, $1.35 million. Can you name a movie in the past, you know, 10 years, say, that got made for $1.35 million?
Not a really low budget, like indie movie. Like movies like Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels don't get made for that kind of money anymore.
No.
They really don't.
That is a very paltry budget. And to do what he did on that amount of budget is absolutely amazing. And to deal with, you know, the British film unions and stuff like that, because it's even, you know, they're even more strict than they are in L.A., you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but it did get a lot of accolades, nominated for a British Academy Film Award in 1998 for Outstanding British Film of the Year. In 2000, Ritchie won an Edgar Award from the Mystery Writers of America for Best Motion Picture Screenplay. 2004, Total Film named it the 38th greatest British film of all time. And in 2016, Empire Magazine ranked Lockstock 75th on their list of 100 best British films. With their entry stating, to call the plot complex is to do it as disservice. It is all so stickly done, delivered with such balls-out confidence, and written with such amazing turn of phrase that somehow the convoluted ing to froing works like clockwork. So well, in fact, that over 18 years later, it remains Ritchie's finest film, a classic achievement for a first-time director who took a group of meticulously cast but relatively unknown actors and spun them into solid fracking gold.
That's very well stated.
Roger Ebert gave it 3 out of 4 stars.
Yeah, I mean, it was very critically well received. I mean, all around it was a success.
Roger Ebert goes on to say, "Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels is a fun slapdash way. It has an exuberance." And in a time where movies follow formulas like zombies, it's alive.
Well, he said what we said much more succinctly.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Rotten Tomatoes critic score is 75%, audience 93%.
Which that surprised me that it was so high, because I mean, me and my friends always liked it growing up, but I mean,
oh yeah.
I never knew a lot of other people who really knew about it besides me and the guys I hung out with.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of guys that I know, like, watched it, and there's probably a lot of girls that would that probably don't know about it. But, I mean, I don't know why. I mean, they probably stayed away from it just knowing, you know, like, the title of it or whatever. Yeah. But it's still such a fun film. All right. They probably watched this movie more because it had Brad Pitt in it, right? Probably watched Snatch more.
I definitely know a lot more people who know about Snatch. Snatch is a very, like, in the popular consciousness.
Yeah. Brad Pitt, who was a big fan of Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, approached director Guy Ritchie and asked for a role in this film. When Ritchie found out Pitt couldn't master a London accent, he gave him the role of Mickey the Gypsy. So Pitt was concerned because he had just finished shooting Fight Club, and he didn't want to play the same type of role again. But Pitt took the role anyway because he wanted to work with Ritchie so badly.
Yeah, and it's funny in retrospect because they can be two more different characters, you know?
Oh, yeah. Pitt plays Mickey O'Neill. It's called a pikey, and we didn't talk about this earlier, but it's basically a slang term for a group of people who call themselves pavies, P-A-V-E-E-S. They're also called travelers. So they're travelers. They live in England and Great Britain and the United States. So I've seen some documentaries about some of the like travelers that are here in the United States. Like there's a few of them in like New Jersey, and yeah, they talk like their language is like a it's kind of a I guess what would you call it, like a it's based off of Gaelic is you know kind of like their language, but
yeah, I mean it's still basically English, but it's so kind of mixed in with other things that it almost sounds like a foreign language.
Mm-hmm. A dialect, that's the word I was looking for. It's like a dialect of Gaelic. So the role of Bricktop was originally offered to Sean Connery. Sean Connery liked the script and was curious to see Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, so producer Matthew Vaughn hastily arranged a screening for him at the extreme short notice. Connery duly turned up and watched the film before emerging with his judgment. Quote, "That is a good film," he said. And then in a stage whisper, "You're not going to be able to afford me." So therefore we got
Connery Alan was Ford. A legend. Well, and Alan Ford again is phenomenal in Snatch. So I can't, Connery would have been a downgrade. Honestly, as great as Connery was, he would not have played Bricktop as well.
No, I have to agree. I have to wholeheartedly agree. Every mistake that Sol, Vincent, and Tyrone make were inspired by various late-night TV shows about real-life crimes gone horribly wrong.
Yeah, again, their stuff is some of the most fun stuff in the entire film. I mean, in a movie full of fun stuff, their stuff is like some of the peak comedy in Snatch.
Yeah. Oh, it's so great. The film's title only appears once throughout the entire movie, where Vinny, Robbie Gee, tells the dog, "Don't snatch," as he takes the squeaky toy. So that was like kind of like foreshadowing for what was going to happen later, where he, you know, took the diamond or whatever. And F word is said 163 times. So 125 for Lock, Stock, and 163 in Snatch.
It's definitely a lot. Yeah, they use it for punctuation in Snatch for sure.
I don't really even notice anymore. I'm so immune to it.
Yeah, I don't either, man. You know, I've had to really think about it through doing the podcast, but in my everyday life, yeah, I don't even hear it anymore. It just kind of goes right through me.
Yeah, when I'm watching a movie, it's like the first couple times, it's like, oh wait, you know, because you're like not watching, you know, TV or something like that. But after that, you're like, no, I'm in it. You know what I mean? It just I don't even notice. Roger Ebert gave it 2 out of 4 stars, and he says, "The actors have cartoon faces, the action is often outrageous, and Ritchie has an aggressive camera style. The movie is not boring, but it doesn't build and doesn't arrive anywhere. It's hard to care much about any of the characters because from moment to moment, what happens to them seems controlled by chance."
You know, to me, that's an odd criticism because you could say the same thing about Lock, Stock, which he which he enjoyed. I wonder if he was more favorable to Lock, Stock because it was fresh.
I will say this. I did read the whole review of Roger Ebert, and he really just thought it was more of a copy of Tarantino and a copy of Ritchie's earlier work. So he didn't really feel it like original. And I just think that this was also, you have to remember, this was 2000, so that we were talking about later in Ebert's career.
Yeah.
He just wasn't feeling these kind of movies. You know what I mean?
It's like, true, yeah. But the way I look at Lock, Stock and Snatch is like Lock, Stock is like the indie EP record. That's like you're in the garage, you're banging it out with your buddies. It's got some guitar noise, some fuzz, but it's got a real energy to it. It's very, you know, alive and buzzing. And Snatch is kind of like after you've been signed by that record label, now you're going to do your big studio album. You're going to do your Wallace Sound album, basically.
Yeah.
And to me, Snatch is just everything in Lock, Stock, bigger and more polished. And to me, it's similar, but it's just good in different ways.
Yeah, it's like the difference between like Nirvana Bleach and Nirvana, you know.
Nevermind, yeah.
Nevermind. It's like, okay, here we can kind of get the idea where you're going, and then it's like a fully developed like thing at you know,
that's exactly it.
Rotten Tomatoes critic score 73%, audience 93%, so that's almost the same as Lock, Stock. So Lock, Stock was 75-93, this was 73-93.
Well, yeah, I said this a lot, but I don't know anyone who doesn't love Snatch, you know.
No, and like I said, once again, you know, when I told my buddy, when I was like text messaging, like I said, when I was text messaging him, it's like, you know, he always asked me like what movies that we're doing, and I told him, he's like, oh, I love those. You know, so and I always found the title of the movie really interesting because it has a very sort of negative connotation to a female body part. And then when I first started watching the film, I'm like, oh, they're talking about like Snatch, about like stealing something.
Yeah.
And then like later you realize that it's really about like the dog.
Like, snatching something out of someone's hand. Yeah.
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 So it's kind of like stealing, but not really.
I think that
Guy Ritchie did that on purpose.
Oh,
I know he did it on purpose.
It's very cheeky British kind of thing. You know, I can see him kind of giggling to himself as he came up with that. Yeah.
Yeah. On April 20th, 2016, Crackle announced that the go-ahead for a new television series based on the film. So they made like two. Did you know about this? The actual Snatch, the TV show?
You know, now that you say that, I remember that. They actually aired them too, if I remember correctly. Yeah.
Yeah, debuted on March 16th, 2017. And, yeah, like.
I never saw them, but I do remember them being a thing.
Yeah, I think they're based on like the two characters, like Turkish and Tommy, and kind of like their sort of, you know, antics about what goes on in the casino and the boxing thing and stuff like that.
Well, I'm sure it's terrible.
Well, Rotten Tomatoes, I mean, does actually have stores for this kind of stuff. I looked it up. Critic score 42%, audience score 88%.
Huh. How many episodes did they make? Do you have any idea?
There's two seasons.
Two seasons? Wow, two I had no idea there were that many of them.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's because Crackle's kind of like the streaming service nobody thinks about, you know?
Yeah. And so, I don't know if it's on Crackle anymore. Let me look it up right quick while we're in the magic of the internet.
Because I remember when they announced it, I remember seeing like a trailer for it, and I completely forgot it existed till just this moment, you know?
Yeah, you can buy it. There's no streaming in the United States except for, you know, you can buy it through the regular, you know, outlets, Apple TV, Amazon, Google Play, Vudu, Fandango. So you can't really, they don't really have it streaming. I don't even know if you can find it on Crackle. I'd have to check, but if they still have it available, you know, but yeah, So, yeah. I mean, I think it'd be worth probably checking out a couple episodes. I don't know. It'd be interesting.
Yeah, well, I'm going to have to go look it up now, because now I'm curious. So, I mean, like, I'm not convinced it's going to be any good, but I'm curious enough to go at least try to find some clips of it.
Uh-huh. All right, so, all right. Oh, so we got to go do the, do we even have to do the, like, would you keep it or would you return it? Because I think we're both going to keep it, right?
Well, yeah, but it's a format, my friends. Let's stick with format. So, we do this in honor of the video store and, you know, the whole experience. So if you were to rent these two movies, we'll put them together because really they are a double feature. Would you keep them an extra day and pay those late fees to watch them again, or would you get them back early because you don't care about seeing them again?
Late fees?
Yeah, I love these movies. I mean, I own them. I've watched them many times. I will revisit them periodically, probably for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I mean, to be quite honest, I cannot believe that I, and all the movies that I've watched and stuff like that I miss these movies. I can only probably tell you the reason why is because I was studying hard in college. And when I mean studying hard, I probably mean drinking a pint.
Yeah, I definitely watched a lot of movies in college, but I did that while drinking. So
I was too busy probably being in a band or in a recording studio or something. Yeah. So, yeah.
That's why I was really happy to kind of convince you to watch these. I knew once you saw them, you would dig them. And I'm so glad that's the case. And the nice thing about it, too, is there are more Guy Ritchie British crime films. These aren't the only two he ever did. And we're going to get to that in a moment as we get into recommendations.
All right. Well, let me do mine first, because mine probably
is. Oh, of course. Yeah.
So I tried to find, like, my recommendation. The only thing I can really think of, you know, besides like a Quentin Tarantino movie like Pulp Fiction that probably everybody's seen anyway, is this other movie that I mentioned before, like earlier, that Vinnie Jones stars in, and that's Get Shorty. And I think that, you know, Get Shorty and these movies have a lot in common. It's almost like the Americanized version. I don't want to say like totally Americanized. It's a little more, you know, cheeky. It's definitely less violent. But yeah, I mean, it does have a fun, kind of, you know, hip hop, you know, sort of soundtrack. And, I mean, it's always, you know, it also has a lot of like kind of twists and turns, and it's another one of my favorite movies from that era.
Well, yeah, and to clarify, I think you meant Dennis Farina, but
Dennis Farina, yeah, sorry,
yeah, the cast, and it's great. It's got John Travolta, Rene Russo, Danny DeVito, Gene Hackman, Delroy Lindo. The cast for Get Shorty is insane. It's such a good movie. Based on an Elmore Leonard novel. It's so fun.
It's directed by Barry Sonnenfeld. I mean, it's just...
It would work if you wanted to program a festival of just movies that were like Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, and you wanted like an American equivalent. Yeah, Get Shorty's a good example of that.
Yeah, and it's only like 105 minutes. I mean, it's just such a fun watch.
Yeah, it's very breezy. It's very, very, very breezy.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's one. I mean, it's actually one of my favorite Danny DeVito films.
Yeah, it's one of his best roles. I mean, it's honestly one of John Travolta's best roles too. I mean, it's a great movie. It really is.
Oh yeah. Oh, and then Harvey Keitel's in it too. I almost forgot.
Yeah, I mean, there's a
even though he's just like the character on screen or whatever the fake movie they're making or whatever.
Yeah, the cast for it's just crazy. It's if you guys haven't seen Get Shorty, it comes highly recommended from both of us for sure.
Oh yeah.
So for me, I'm gonna recommend two because, like I said, Guy Ritchie made some other British crime films. He's made more than two other ones, but a couple of them aren't very good. But the ones that are good are the ones I'm gonna mention now. He did one called Rock and Rolla, and that's Rolla with an A. It stars Gerard Butler, Idris Elba, Tom Hardy, Thandie Newton. And I'm not going to tell you the plot because, again, the plots of these things are labyrinths.
Yeah.
But it's the same kind of thing. It's a bunch of low-level hoods, you know, a MacGuffin, intersecting storylines. It's so much fun. If you like Lock, Stock, and you like the actors I just mentioned, you got to see Rock and Rolla. It's good. It's one of his best films. I say it's probably as good as Snatch.
Mm-hmm.
And just back in 2019, he returned to the genre again with a film called The Gentleman. And this is again another kind of big budget sort of take on it. It stars Charlie Hunnam from Sons of Anarchy and Matthew McConaughey, oddly enough, and Hugh Grant. And it's probably the weakest of the four Guy Ritchie crime movies I've talked about. But if you like Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, if you like Snatch, if you like Rock and Rolla, you're gonna like The Gentleman too. Because again, it's about criminals, drug dealers, comedy, unconventional storylines, quirky characters. If you like all those things, you're gonna like The Gentleman. You're gonna like Rock and Rolla. If you want to have a Guy Ritchie film festival, you can take those four movies and have yourself a really good weekend of just British crime and comedy and ridiculous accents.
Right, and then you and all your friends can learn Cockney slang and, you know, confuse everybody else around you.
Yeah, get weird looks from everyone else in your neighborhood, for sure.
That's right. All right, well, that about does it for this episode of Video Culture. I don't know what's coming up next.
Yeah, let's just say it's a surprise, because I'll go ahead and give you the eeky. We don't really know what's next, so we're just going to say it's a surprise. But we'll have it figured out by the time this comes out, I promise.
Yeah, oh, for sure. Well, that about does it. I'm Ryan Akery.
And I'm Matthew Estrie. Go watch some movies, guys.
Thanks for checking out this episode of Video Culture. You can check us out on Twitter at Video Culture 2.
That's the number 2 for two guys talking about movies like Ryan and myself.
And you can also check us out on Facebook. Just search for Video Culture Podcast.
Also, be sure to stop by our official website, video-culture.com. There we have the entire show archives, as well as articles about film.
Yeah, so check us out. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, come hang out with us, talk movies. Did you like the show? Do you hate the show? Do you like or hate the movies we talked about? Let us know. Come chat with us, and let's all watch movies together.
Do you know something that I don't?
Jeez, it's flawless.
Where?
London.
London.
You know, fish, chips, cup of tea, Mary Poppins, London.
What do I know about diamonds? I'm a boxing promoter.
I've got a bare knuckle fight, so I want to use the piking.
Professor Vassilier.
Concentrate.
What?
You're going to have to repeat that.
Professor Vassilier. Concentrate.
You what?
What is a gun doing in your trousers?
Protection.
Protection from what?
The Germans.
Open the case and give me the stone.
The only man who knew the combination. You just shot.
I'm getting heartburn. Tony, do something terrible.
Where is the stone?
Heavy.
Shut up and sit down, you big bald.
So what should I call
you? You can call me Susan if it makes you happy.
I don't care if it's Muhammad, Imad, Bruce Lee.
You're going down in the fourth round.
Whoops.
Anything to declare?
Yeah. Don't go to England.
Status house frame furniture. And scarf cushions with matching shotgun covers.
Did you understand a single word of what he just said?